This podcast is part of the Erotica Podcast Network, which includes the Erotica Podcast, Erotica Sci-Fi and Fantasy, Erotica Loving Wives, and the Spotify podcast Erotica Taboo Podcast for more intense sexual themes. Both the Erotica Podcast and the Erotica Taboo Podcast offer $2 subscriptions, which opens up bonus content. Links for everything are in the podcast description. This podcast contains mature content and is intended for an adult audience only. It contains explicit words, thoughts, and ideas. The content of all stories is fiction, with any similarities to real people or events being purely coincidental. This podcast is not intended for anything but entertainment of the listener, and if you do not agree with the themes listed in the tags, please do not listen to the story. All characters engaging in sexual relationships or activities are 18 years old or older. This story was found on a free website and brought to audio form here. I did not write and take no credit for this story. Please visit the link in the comments to further support this author. Hidden Lives by Black Randall, 1958. When the shit hits the fan, there's rarely time to react rationally. There's no plan, no organization. Everything just seems to be chaos. Blakely woke up to the sound of her front door breaking. The lights came on outside and her burglar alarm started going off. She was disoriented for a minute, but she did have a plan for that. She lived in a log home. It wasn't one of those fake log homes made out of slabs over a stick frame. This was a real log home. The walls were thick and strong, and she had a safe room. It doubled as her walk-in closet, and she hurried there, locking the heavy door behind her. She dialed 911 and told the dispatcher that someone was breaking into her house. At the same time, she took her Ithaca Featherlight 12-gauge shotgun down off the rack on her wall. It was one of the few of her father's things she possessed. She worked the slide on the pump action and chambered a round of 00 buckshot. She loaded another shell, giving her 5 shots, got her 9mm pistol and slapped in a clip. She set 2 more full clips on the table beside the comfortable chair in the closet, sat down, cradled her shotgun, and waited for the police. She talked to the dispatcher on her cell phone, and she heard noises in her bedroom. Men's voices were talking heatedly outside her door. A heavy body crashed against it several times before they gave up. Several shots were fired, and she supposed they were trying to shoot out the lock. She laughed. It was covered with case-hardened steel. She heard a shout, and several more shots were fired. There were no more noises in her bedroom, but she didn't come out. Her phone beeped, telling her she had an incoming call. She put the police dispatcher on hold and answered it. It was from her nearest neighbor. Blakely lived on a 10-acre patch of woods, and her closest neighbor was Bran McCalla. She saw his name on the caller ID, and she wondered if he had heard the shots. "Hello, Bran," she said.
"Jesus Christ, Blakely! What the hell is going on? I heard your alarm going off and I came over to check on you. I thought I heard gunshots, and when I got there were 3 men in your house. They shot at me, Blakely. They tried to kill me and they're chasing me. Where are you?" she asked.
"I'm up on the cliff. I think I lost them, but I'm going to climb somewhere they can't follow me."
"Good,"
she said. Brand was a climber, and she knew he could get away. He had mentioned that he had climbed that face several times.
"Get somewhere safe, and when the police get here I'll send them to you. I'll explain everything when it's over. Come over after the police find you and I'll have a stiff drink and an explanation waiting for you."
She heard sirens in the distance, and she switched back to the dispatcher. When the dispatcher told her the police were in the house, she told him where she was. Soon there was a knock on the door, and a female voice asked if she was okay and identified herself. Blakely pulled the rope to unlock the door and leveled the shotgun. The door swung slowly open and she saw the uniform. The officer raised her hands.
"We really are the police, Miss Davidson."
Blakely laughed and put her shotgun back on the rack.
"I'm very glad to see you," she said. "My neighbor is up on the cliff above my house. The intruder shot at him when he came to check on me and chased him. I'll call him and tell him you're coming."
Two officers started toward the cliff and Blakely led the woman back downstairs. She refused to answer any questions until she had poured 2 tumblers of good scotch and took a seat in a chair.
"Now I'm ready,"
she smiled at the woman.
"I'm Officer Donovan,"
the woman told her.
"Do you know who broke into your house?"
"No, I went to my safe room as soon as I heard the door break,"
Blakely said.
"I never saw anyone. All I know is that they are male. I heard their voices. There were 3 of them. Are you missing anything? Do you think they robbed you?"
Donovan asked.
"I haven't had a chance to look, but I don't think they had time,"
Blakely said.
"They weren't in the house more than 5 minutes before my neighbor interrupted them. Would you mind coming down to the station and making a report?"
"No, I'll do that, but not tonight. I'll do it tomorrow afternoon,"
Blakely said. The two officers came back with Brand, and Blakely thanked them. When she went to the remains of her front door and held it, they took the hint and went outside.
"We'll check around outside, but there's no sign of anyone. They're gone, Miss Davidson,"
one of the officers told her.
"Are you going to be okay?"
"Yes, I'll lock the storm door and I'll be fine. I'll be in tomorrow afternoon to make that statement."
She went back inside and Brand was sipping his scotch.
"What the hell, Blakely?"
he exploded.
"Those bastards nearly got me. I heard bullets zipping around. Who were they?"
"I can't tell you that,"
she said.
"It's related to my work."
"You work with homicidal maniacs?"
He was incredulous.
"Yes, sometimes. You know I'm an attorney, Brand. I'm a criminal defense attorney. I know that's a contradiction in terms, but I sometimes defend unsavory characters. Why would someone want to kill their attorney?"
he asked.
Hell, they even tried to kill your neighbor. Maybe they don't like nosy neighbors. She smiled at him. Jesus, look at you. He exclaimed. You're as cool as a cucumber. Has this happened to you before? Not quite like this. She said. No one has ever broken into my house. I've been shot at before. I don't think I even know you. He said. When did my nice, quiet little cute neighbor turn into Rambo? You don't know me very well. She said. You've only lived here 2 weeks and we've only met twice. Will you go out with me tomorrow? He asked. It was Blakely's turn to be surprised. Where did that come from, Brand? I wanted to ask you the day you brought over the cupcakes and said welcome to the area because you were just so hot. He said. Now you're amazing, Blakely. I've got to get to know you better. Well, I can't go out with you tomorrow. She said. We both need to go to the police station and make statements. I do have an idea, though. Why don't I pick you up for lunch and we'll ride together to the police station? We'll chat and you can see if you want to actually ask me out, and I can see if I actually want to go. That's perfect. Brand said. What time do you want to go? Let's talk about it in the morning. Blakely suggested. I have another favor to ask you. Would you mind spending the night? His jaw dropped, and she laughed. I'm not asking you to have sex, Brand. I'm sort of creeped out by all this and I just want someone around. You can sleep down here in the bedroom and I'll sleep upstairs in mine. Would you do that for me? At this point, if Blakely had asked for the moon, he would have figured out some way to get it for her. He went home and got things to spend the night. When he got back, she had another scotch waiting for him. They talked for a while and went to bed. There wasn't much night left by that time, and Blakely slept until 10. Brand seemed to still be asleep, so she went down and knocked on his door. He mumbled that he was awake, so she made coffee and went back upstairs to shower and dress. By the time she was finished, he was sitting at the kitchen bar and drinking coffee. She had muffins she had bought on the way home the evening before, and they each ate one. Blakely showed him around the house and he was very impressed. She had what looked like a major communication center in her office. There were 8 monitors, all with the capability of showing something different or slave together, and her 3 computers were all state-of-the-art. She even had an AS-400 running a serious database. Brand was a computer expert. He knew several computer languages and worked for a software giant as a software engineer. What Blakely had was some heavy-duty computer horsepower. What do you use all this for? He asked. It seems like overkill for an attorney. I use it to get information. She said. I'm not telling you everything about what I do, Brand. I'm never going to tell you everything about what I do. If you don't want to be friends with me because of that, I won't hold it against you. When did I say that? He was a little startled by her answer. Don't try to run me off, Blakely. I didn't say that. I'm sorry. She said. I'm not used to having people in my house or asking me questions. It's time for us to leave if we want to eat lunch. They got in her black Lincoln Navigator and drove to a deli. They had very good pastrami, and they both ate their sandwiches with a big pickle wedge. When they were through eating, they drove to the police station and made statements. Neither got to hear what the other one said, and Brand was curious. What did you tell them? He asked. I told them I never saw the men and I had no idea who would want to hurt me. She said. What did you tell them? I told them there were 3 of them. They were dressed in black, had masks on, and I didn't know any more details because I was running like my ass was on fire. He said. I tend to do that when people shoot at me. Blakely laughed. Well, I hope they catch someone. She said. Why do I have the feeling you know exactly what's going on? He asked. You know who did this, don't you? Yes, I do. You're very perceptive, Brand. What are you going to do if they come back? He asked. Those won't be coming back. She said. How do you know? He wondered. I'm going to make a couple of phone calls. Someone will take care of them. They made a mistake and they'll be removed. She said. Removed? Is that a euphemism for killed? No, it means removed. She said. They were working for a competitor of my current client. They broke some very important unwritten rules, and if their employer doesn't discipline them, they'll be ruined. I can't tell you any more than that, Brand. If that shocks you or you don't want to be around me anymore, I'll drop you at your house and we'll just be neighbors that way when we see each other. Is that what you want? Why do you keep doing that? Brand asked. Doing what? Why do you keep trying to push me away? Every time we start talking, you hit this wall and tell me to get lost. He said, frowning. She laughed. I'm not telling you to get lost. I'm just giving you a way out. I know it seems like I'm being mysterious, but I'm just telling you that there are things I won't tell you. Do you want out? Hell no. I've never met anyone like you, Blakely. I mean, look at you. You're all little and cute and blonde. You look like someone's gorgeous little sister, and you're all calm and serene, and your front door is a wreck and you have bullet holes in your wall. Will you go out with me tomorrow? She laughed again. You're very persistent, Brand. I'll give you props for that. No, I won't go out with you tomorrow. I need to get my house repaired and I have some work to do. I'll call you when I'm ready, okay? If you don't call me by Friday afternoon, I'm going to come over and camp out on your doorstep. He said. He picked his stuff up from her house and she dropped him at his house. Brand had to go to work the next day, too, and he went to sleep with nothing but images of Blakely flashing before his eyes. Blakely had lawyer-type things to do for the rest of the week, and she was very busy. She had a major trial coming up and she was running down witnesses. She didn't do that herself,
but the detectives she hired were giving her a pretty clear picture of who she needed to depose and what had actually happened in the case. Her client was accused of assault on a police officer and a host of other charges that went along with that. Blakely believed that the assault had been the other way around, and she was intent on proving that. She also had an out-of-town job to do, and she didn't get home until late Friday afternoon. She showered and changed into comfortable clothes, deciding to work in her flowers in front of the house for the rest of the afternoon. She had forgotten all about calling Brand and was only reminded when she saw him walking through the woods toward her house. "Hello, Brand," she said when he came up behind her. She was wearing a little flowered sundress, and she looked up at him from where she was kneeling on a small rug. She had a smudge of dirt on her forehead, and she pushed a strand of blonde hair behind her ear, leaving another smudge on her cheek with the cotton gloves she was wearing.
"You didn't call me," he said.
She smiled.
"I'm sorry, I've been very busy. I have a trial next week that's very important to me, and I was in DC on business. When you left Sunday night, I was going to call you later in the week. I just got distracted."
She stood up and Brand thought she looked adorable. She took off her gloves and reached into the pocket of her dress, taking out her phone. She punched in a number, and his phone rang.
"Hello, Brand," she giggled. "I promised to call you."
He ended the call and she put her phone away.
"Where do you want to go tomorrow night for our date?"
he asked her.
"Let's not call it a date," she said. "Let's call it dinner and dancing so we can get to know one another. You can pick me up at 7 and I'll have reservations set up."
"Okay, it's a date," he laughed.
Brand went home and Blakely went back to her gardening. She liked Brand, she decided. Her life was very complicated, and she wasn't sure there was room in it for anything other than casual relationships, but Brand was interesting. He was very handsome, she thought. He was tall, well-built, and she loved his eyes. They were gray and had an interesting twinkle to them that gave him a lot of character. She had never dated a redhead before. She spread mulch in her flowerbed and went inside to clean up. She stepped out of the shower and dried off. As she fluffed her hair with the towel, she caught a glimpse of herself in the mirror and eyed herself critically. She knew men liked to look at her. Her long blonde hair, so light it was nearly white, tended to draw attention. She could feel the ends tickling her butt. It was a nice little butt too. She worked hard to make sure it was. When she was growing up, she was kind of flat, and she had been lifting weights since she was 14 to make sure it didn't stay that way. Her hard work had paid off and she was firm and muscular. She flexed it and giggled as it danced. She had a tiny waist and her upper body flared nicely above it. Her breasts were high and firm. They weren't huge, but she was very slender and they looked like they were very large on her slim frame. She cupped them and her nipples sprang erect as her fingers brushed over them. They were fat and pink and her areola crinkled as the moisture from her shower evaporated, leaving a chill. She laughed at her narcissism. Turning away from the mirror, she went to her closet. She had a new little blue dress she wanted to wear. It was shiny and left one creamy shoulder bare. She put on black heels and found a clutch, transferring essentials to it from her bigger purse. She dried her hair and made a braid down one side before applying her makeup. She didn't wear much, her skin made that unnecessary, and she just put on a little foundation and eye stuff. She hated her pale brows and eyelashes. They made her look like a milkmaid, she thought. Brand rang the doorbell as she was coming down the stairs, and when she opened the door, his jaw dropped.
"My God, Blakely," he said. "You're gorgeous," she curtsied.
"Thank you, sir."
She eyed his tall form. He had on black pants and a nice pink Oxford shirt with a button-down collar.
"You look very charming yourself. I'm an accessory tonight," he said. "I know who the star of this show is."
He gave her his arm and took her to his car. Brand usually drove a Suburban to work, but he had a blue Audi R8 Spider with the V10 that he drove when he wanted to impress a girl. He definitely wanted to impress this one, and her smile when she saw the car was gratifying. They put the top down, and she gave him directions. They went to a seafood place down on a cliff overlooking the surf, and it was very good. Brand had never been there before, and he complimented Blakely on her choice. After dining, she gave him directions again, and they wound up at what appeared to be a warehouse in the commercial district. There was a queue of people stretching around the block, and they had to park 3 blocks away. When they walked up to the door, Blakely ignored the queue and led him up to the door. A huge, black guy was sitting there, and he stood up when they approached and opened the door.
"Miss Davidson," he nodded.
She patted his arm.
"Hi, Tony," she said.
"Thanks for letting us in."
"Hey, what the hell?"
Two guys about 10 people deep in the line seemed upset.
"We've been waiting here for 45 minutes. Why do they just get to walk in?"
Tony gave them a look.
"You want me to break your arm? Shut the fuck up or you won't get in at all. Besides, she's hot and you're not."
"Sorry about that, Miss Davidson," he said.
She patted his arm again, and they went inside. A heavy bass beat greeted them and Blakely led Brand upstairs. There was another guy at the bottom of the stairs that could have been a twin to the one at the door. He took down a velvet rope and nodded. They went up and a young lady in uniform led them to a table. They ordered drinks and she went away.
"I guess you're kind of a big deal?" Brand asked.
Blakely smiled.
"The owner is my client. I've done a good job for him and he's grateful." "What did you do?"
he asked.
"He moves this place around a lot," she said. "Nightclubs like this are hot for a year or two and then they start getting old to people. When the bloom's off the rose, he shuts down and moves somewhere else. There are people around that are territorial. They expect payoffs, and if they don't get them, they get rough.
He gets rougher and I've defended him on two occasions. He and his guys roughed up some enforcers and the police got involved. I got the charges dropped, and the other guys charged instead. That got me some credit, and he looks out for me. You're amazing, Blakely. Nothing I do is anything close to how exciting what you do is.
Oh, I don't know, she said.
Last week he tracked down and caught that group of hackers that were stealing designs from your company. Did you know they shot it out with the FBI?
Brand's jaw dropped.
How could you possibly know that, Blakely? That is top secret stuff that no one outside the FBI and security at my company is supposed to know about. I like to know what kind of people my neighbors are.
She smiled.
You're very good at your job, Brand. You like mountain climbing, parasailing and skydiving. You're a competitive judo fighter, and you love frozen custard. Did I miss anything? Yes, I'm in love with the smartest, hottest little blonde girl I've ever met.
He laughed.
Jesus, Blakely, you're pretty plugged in.
Yes, I am.
If my neighbor is Hannibal Lecter, I want to know about it so I can eat him before he eats me.
She said.
You're not in love with me yet, big boy. I haven't decided if you can handle me yet. I'm not an easy friend to have, Brand. I go through men like chewing gum. I'm not a slut, but I like romance. Most guys won't put up with the kind of trouble I bring.
What kind of trouble?
He asked. Well, if you glance off to your right, you'll see it coming.
She said.
Brand let his eyes slid over and there was a man walking toward them. He was carrying two drinks and he was a tall, heavily built guy in a very expensive suit. He walked up to the table and set his drinks down.
Hey, pretty lady. I got the waitress to tell me what you were drinking. He said with a smile.
Would you dance one dance with me?
Blakely didn't even glance up.
I'm with someone. She said. The fact that you didn't ask his permission first tells me you're an asshole. Get lost before I have you thrown out of here.
Listen, bitch, I don't think you know who I am. He began in an angry voice.
Before he could get any further, two giant bouncers appeared at his side. Is this man bothering you, Miss Davidson? One of them asked.
I don't know, John. She said.
She looked up at the man for the first time. Are you bothering me?
No, I guess I'm not. He said.
Enjoy the drink. He walked away and Brand shut his mouth.
That kind of trouble. She said.
I'm obviously here with you. But about 15 men are going to come over here and offer to buy me a drink or ask me to dance with me. Some of them will be gentlemen and ask you if they can ask me. Some are going to be assholes. If we were down on the floor, it would be worse.
Are you going to dance with any of them?
He asked.
If you let me. She said.
I like to dance, Brand. I like cranking guys up. After every dance, I'll come back here. I won't let them feel me up inside my clothes.
I won't kiss them.
I won't go anywhere with any of them. I'll go home with you. I'll dance with you every dance if you want to. If you tell me no, I'll stay right here, but they will ask. I know what I look like, Brand. I like the attention.
Who wouldn't?
Can you stand being here with me, knowing that's going to happen?
Hell yes, he said.
Every man in the room wonders why you're here with me. They're thinking how lucky I am and I'm thinking the same thing. If you promise me that everything is going to happen just like you said it was, I'll sit here when we're not dancing and watch you and think about how lucky I am that you're with me.
That was a very good answer, she said.
She took his face in her little hands and pulled him forward until she could kiss him. She tasted like the mimosa she had been drinking and she had the softest, puffiest lips that Brand had ever kissed. He was rock hard in his pants when she pulled away and her eyes were blazing.
That was everything I dreamed it would be, he said.
What happens if you get out there with some guy and he gets out of line?
Don't get involved, she said.
I can handle myself. You're a very good fighter, Brand. You wouldn't last 30 seconds against me standing up. You could take me on the ground, unless I got lucky. Believe me, I've been constantly hit on since I was 16. I know how to handle it. What if I don't like the guy that asks me if you can dance?
Brand asked.
Tell him no, she said. I won't do anything you say no to. Remember, you're taking me home and don't get jealous. Now dance with me.
Brand was actually a very good dancer, but Blakely was in a whole different league. She was poetry in motion and he felt like he was drowning in a pool of sensuality.
Watching her spectacular body move to music was an experience like nothing of which he had ever been a part. Her eyes never left his unless her back was to him, and that happened occasionally as she danced against him, her arms raised and her amazing ass driving him wild. The music slowed and she moved into his arms. He feared for a while he was going to come in his pants as she moved tightly against his erection. His hands drifted south until they were cupping the round cheeks of her ass, pulling her even tighter against the bulge in his pants. She stayed there into the next song, and he quickly found that everything she said was true. Five times during the next song they were interrupted by someone trying to cut in, and Blakely froze them with just a glance. She led him back to their table, and before they had hardly sat down another man was asking Brand if he would allow Blakely to dance with him.
Give us a couple of songs and she can.
Brand told him. And the man thanked him, promising to be back.
Jesus Christ, Blakely, you weren't kidding.
He laughed.
I know why, too. After dancing with you, I would kill, pillage, and burn to do it again. I think watching you would produce the same effect.
God, you're sexy. I thought so when you were kneeling in your flower bed with dirt on your face, but Blakely in a dress on the dance floor is a whole nother ball game. She smiled.
It's always been like this for me. It took a lot of my teenage years to get used to it. It just seems normal to me now.
They got another drink.
I should tell you, Brand. Don't drink that drink the guy brought us.
Why not? It was free. He asked. It has ecstasy in it, she said.
How can you tell?
I can smell it, Blakely said.
It smells kind of like vanilla.
Brand sniffed the glass and he could smell it.
Christ, Blakely, the guy was trying to drug us.
It happens a lot, she said. They think they have a better chance of getting in my pants, my dress on this occasion. Never take a drink someone offers you in a place you don't know or even there if it doesn't come from a waiter at a place you trust or you don't see it being made. Some of the date rape drugs you can't smell or taste, like GHB.
My God, what kind of life do you lead?
He exclaimed.
It's just my life, she said.
I'm used to it, but I know it must be quite a shock to you.
That's the freaking understatement of the year, he said.
This is going to take some getting used to, Blakely.
Does that mean you want to get used to it?
She asked.
Oh, hell yes, he said.
I've never had this much fun in my life. I'm pretty much a nerd, you know. That's why I like you, she said.
I'm pretty much a nerd too, but most people can't see it.
They finished their drinks, and the guy came back for his dance.
Get me some water and another drink, will you please, Bran?
She asked. Her escort led her out on the floor.
Red's a lucky guy, he said.
I'm Samuel, by the way.
I'm not going to be able to take you away from him, am I?
Blakely. She laughed.
No, there isn't a snowball's chance in hell, but I promise this dance will be something he'll never regret.
It was also one he'd never forget. Her hot ass against him, the feel of those breasts against his chest and that face and those eyes would haunt him. When Brand got the attention of the waiter and got the drinks and the water Blakely had asked for, he watched, fascinated by the way she moved. She was like one of those hunting cats you see on the nature shows, sleek, sinuous, gorgeous, and a little terrifying at the same time. He would never get tired of just watching her. She was a mixture of the cute little girl next door and a very high-end escort, all rolled up in one dynamite package. He danced with her 5 more times and watched her dance with half a dozen more partners. She never consented to dance with the same guy twice except him, and although she didn't seem to mind wandering hands, she never let them linger or move under any part of her dress. If anyone asked her before asking Brand, she told them to get lost. She even danced with a stunning redheaded woman, and Brand thought his eyes would pop out of his head.
If you ever want to swing both ways, give me a call, she said as she walked Blakely back to her table.
Your boyfriend's hot. After every dance, she came back to the table and drank water or more of her mimosas. Her eyes were shining, and after the last time she danced with him, when the song ended, she stayed in his arms and whispered in his ear.
Take me home, Brand. I need you to take me home now.
She was all over him on the way home.
I haven't been able to do this in a long time, she said. I had a relationship 2 years ago, and that's the last time.
I get pretty wound up and I need someone to go home to. If I don't have that, it can get bad. I know that, so I don't do it. Do you think you might be interested in a relationship, Bran?
I am if you are, he said.
You're going to find it very odd.
She warned him.
I'm gone a lot. Odd things make me horny. I'm going to need you to be there for me when that happens. I won't tell you where I'm going sometimes, and I won't answer any questions about it. I'll try to prove to you that you can trust me, but you'll never know some things. I'm telling you this up front so you have a chance to back out and nobody gets hurt. I won't cheat on you, ever, and if you cheat on me, that's the end of us. Do you understand, and do you still want to go home with me?
Yes, I want to go home with you.
I don't know what to say about the other stuff. Give me an instance of something that makes you horny, and I'll have to be there. I'm going to court tomorrow in a case that means a lot to me. If I win, I'll fuck you to death. If I lose, I'll be very weepy and I'll need to be held and loved. He laughed. So I'll either get the little girl that needs my love or the slut that wants to fuck me to death?
Sounds like a win-win situation to me. She unbuckled her seatbelt and pulled his zipper down. He was engulfed in hottest mouth on earth. Blakely was pleasantly surprised. He had a very nice cock. It wasn't huge, but she was small and she just thought huge was painful and weird. This was the perfect length for her and very fat. She did like fat. It stretched her mouth pleasantly, and she couldn't wait for it to stretch her pussy. She really, really liked Brand, and she believed he was someone she could love. She had checked him out thoroughly and liked everything she found. He was smart, funny, and in love with life. He was fascinated with her, and that combination made her want him very badly. He came almost before she could get started, and the quantity nearly choked her.
Wow, she thought. He must have been really stoked by the show. She cleaned him up and tucked him back in his pants.
Jesus, Blakely, you're a tiger, he exclaimed.
I can't believe you did that.
That was amazing.
She smiled. I wanted to get you off, because when I get you home it's going to be all night.
Is that okay?
He grinned.
With you?
Yes, I think that's going to be okay.
She jumped out when he pulled into her garage and unlocked the door. They were shedding clothes as they climbed the stairs, and by the time they got to the bed she was down to a matching blue lace bra and panty, set, and he was in his boxers. He gathered her up in his arms, and she was surprisingly heavy. She wasn't very big, but she was all muscle. He tossed her easily onto the bed and she bounced, giggling, the motion sending waves through her breasts. He unhooked her bra, noticing that it had a couple of extra hooks. When he got it off, he saw why. She needed the support for those mountains. On a bigger girl they would have been just large, on her small frame they looked like the swelling of the Himalayas. Her nipples resembled those bought for baby bottles except not as long, and these were erect and rock hard. Brand drank in the sight of her, as he knelt between her thighs on the floor at the foot of the bed. He slid her panties down, and drew in his breath with a gasp.
Her mons rose from the flat plane of her belly in a smooth slope, wispy blonde curls were trimmed into the shape of a flame and he could smell her arousal. He wanted to play with her exquisite little pussy, but Blakely was having none of that. She scooted up on the bed and pulled him with her. "We can play later," she said. "I need that big cock in me, now." She grasped it firmly and inserted him inside her. She was dripping wet and he slid into her easily. It was the tightest, hottest thing he had ever imagined. She felt like she was running a fever, hotter than anything he had imagined. Blakely couldn't believe how turned on she was. She came as soon as he was inside her, and as his large member plunged deeper inside her she could tell that she was going to come again soon. Very soon, it turned out, as a series of small orgasms kept rolling through her. She could hear a woman moaning but it seemed unconnected, someone else. She was in a sexual daze, her mind consumed with pleasure, and her body racked by spasms of ecstasy. She had been strongly attracted to Brand the day they met, and more as she spent time with him. Her dancing had built her to a fever pitch, and now she could feel herself building to a massive orgasm. Brand was astonished at her sexual energy. There was no gentle build to a peak for Blakely. She writhed and twisted, enveloping his cock and squeezing him with her inner muscles until he was ready to explode. Her cries were loud and unbelievably erotic, her legs up and ankles wrapped around the small of his back as she urged him on. He pounded into her little pussy and she gave back everything and more, totally opening herself to him and surrendering to the passion building within her. She heard a scream and dimly knew it was her. She was seized by a huge contraction, her entire body stiffening as her pleasure peaked. The most intense orgasm of her life swept over her, and it built until it became a roaring in her ears. Her eyes rolled up, and had it lasted longer she knew she would have passed out. She felt him spurt inside her, his cum soothing and scalding her at the same time. He cried out and his thrusts became uneven as he was gripped in his own pleasure. They collapsed together, struggling to breathe as they recovered from their frenzy. He rolled to the side, taking her with him and pulled her face to his. Her eyes opened and their lashes mingled. He kissed her cute little nose and she giggled. "Oh my God, Bran," she murmured. "That was amazing." "Thank you, thank you. I needed that so bad. I haven't been able to turn loose like this for so long. I love your cock," he laughed. "You nearly killed me, Blakely. Damn, what a woman. You are the sexiest, cutest, most special girl on the planet. That was beyond sex. It was spiritual." She gave him a kiss that curled his toes and looked seriously into his eyes. "Brand, I need to tell you something. I could fall in love with you. I think I already am. If I'm just a fuck buddy to you, that's okay, but I need to know how you feel about me so I know how to react. If it's just sex, I need you to get up right now and go. I'll still fuck you and we can be friends, but you can't stay because what we're about to do next is going to be something else, and I can't do it with you unless you tell me you're feeling it, too." He looked into those blazing blue eyes and he was lost. "Blakely, I knew from the minute I opened my door and saw you standing there with your cupcakes to welcome me to the neighborhood that you were the girl for me. I was praying that you weren't married and that there would be a chance for me. Every second I spend with you just pulls me in deeper. I know I'm falling in love with you. You're an enchanting little gypsy and I know you're going to lead me on a merry chase and I can't wait. Every minute I'm not with you I'm thinking about you and what you would say, or what expression you would have on your face. I'm thinking about how much I would like to feel those breasts against my chest or what you might taste like. You're my dream girl and there won't ever be anyone else for me." She gave a little sob. "Oh, thank God. I was afraid you would just think I'm a slut, and you would just want to fuck me. I just felt this connection with you and it was killing me wanting to be with you. You're not the kind of guy I usually go with, Brand. I've always kind of picked the bad boys. They fit my lifestyle, but you're something special. You are in for quite a ride, but just stick with me and I'll make sure it's one you'll never regret, okay? I wouldn't want it any other way," he said. She rolled him onto his back and climbed on top of him, kissing him gently and for a very long time. Sliding down his body she engulfed him in her hot little mouth. "We taste good." She grinned up at him before sliding him back inside. Her mouth was very hot, and she exerted tremendous suction as her tongue swirled around the helmet of his renewed erection. He pulled at her until she moved over him, her hot little pussy over him in perfect position to allow him to tongue the little button of her clit. She exploded again immediately, and he kept her coming until her motions became efforts to escape and she spun around, impaling herself on his stiff cock. This was a slow burn and she kept riding him, spinning around finally with her hands on his thighs, and he delighted in watching that tight ass rising and falling, over and over as her motions became frantic. She was seeking release and he pulled her off, pinning her face down on the bed as he entered her from behind. He rocked inside her, teasing her into a quivering, pleading bundle of wanting. "Please, Bran," she begged. "Finish me. Let me come. I'm going crazy, baby. Fuck me hard with that big cock. Let me come." He thrust into her at a quick pace and she began to tremble. He spanked her delicious ass and pounded into her as a scream of ecstasy was torn from her throat. She continued to scream and he felt her squirt, her juices hot against him as he came for the third time that night. She felt her pussy flood and she kept coming, long after he stopped moving as her muscles fluttered around him, like heat lightning on a summer night. He slowly withdrew his deflating cock and lay beside her, pulling on her until she moved to lay half atop his big body and cradling her in one arm. "Will you come and watch me in court tomorrow?" she asked. "I'm really very good. I think I'm going to make quite a statement." "I'd love to," he told her. "I'll see if I can work from my laptop. Can I spend the night?" I'll kill you if you try to leave, she told him. She woke him up the next morning, sucking him to life and riding him to climax before they showered together. She came 3 times to his once before they went to the shower. He pushed her against the wall and licked her little pussy until she came again and slumped to the floor.
Oh my God, she murmured when he pulled her up. I don't know if I can stand. Damn, you've got a good tongue.
She pulled herself together and made a quick breakfast before leaving for court. Brand called work and discovered there was no reason for him to be in the office, so he took his laptop and headed to the courthouse. There was quite a crowd of reporters outside when he got there, and he realized that this trial must be a bigger deal than she had let on. Brand slipped into the back of the courtroom and took a seat. The room was packed, and he couldn't wait to see Blakely in action. He expected her to be as good at being a lawyer as she was at everything else. What happened was beyond his wildest expectations. She destroyed the case against her client. Her client was a young black man named Wayne Hampton. He was charged with assaulting a police officer, resisting arrest, and attempted murder. The arresting officer was Patrick O'Reilly. According to his testimony, he had received a radio call that a young black man fitting Hampton's description had robbed a convenience in the vicinity, and he had approached Hampton to question him. Hampton became agitated, attacked O'Reilly, and O'Reilly had tasered him. The two struggled. Hampton attempted to take O'Reilly's gun, and he was only saved from being murdered by the intervention of another officer who had seen the incident and came to assist. The second officer was James Hannity. Hannity was introduced by the prosecutor as a decorated police officer who had won Officer of the Month on several occasions, most notably, the previous month. He testified that he had witnessed the entire incident and came up in time to subdue Hampton before he could use the gun he had wrested from O'Reilly on his fellow officer. Blakely was fairly easy on O'Reilly. She asked him if he had interviewed any witnesses to the incident and if there were any police reports mentioning witnesses. He admitted that he hadn't interviewed anyone but that there was a police report from a man named Jason Berg that corroborated his story. Officer O'Reilly, would it surprise you to learn that there are eyewitness accounts that directly contradict your account? Blakely asked.
Yes, that would surprise me, he said.
Would it surprise you to learn that there are eyewitness accounts that state that you tasered Mr. Hampton before ever speaking to him, uttered racial epithets, that he was totally incapacitated by the taser, and that state that you beat him with your nightstick for several minutes before Officer Hannity arrived and joined the attack?
That never happened, he began to bluster.
I don't know what you're trying to pull here, lady, but it won't work. The sworn testimony of 2 police officers is more than enough to establish the facts. I don't care what your witnesses say.
Why is that?
Blakely asked. Are you telling the court that the testimony of police officers is more reliable than the testimony of ordinary people?
Yes, it is.
People lie all the time.
Do police officers lie?
Blakely asked.
No, they don't, he snarled.
Your Honor, the defense will produce expert witnesses that will tell the court that police officers often lie, often deliberately perjure themselves. When we get this testimony, we will want to recall Officer O'Reilly and Officer Hannity to the stand.
So noted, the judge intoned.
Listen, cunt, O'Reilly growled.
I don't.
Your Honor, Blakely interrupted. The judge hammered his gavel. Mr. O'Reilly, you will address this court and counsel with respect. You just earned a contempt of court citation. How much beyond 5 days you're going to spend in jail is going to depend on how you conduct yourself for the rest of this trial.
She was dash,
O'Reilly began.
She was doing her job,
the judge thundered.
You will address her as counselor or Miss Davidson. Do I make myself clear?
Yes, Your Honor, he mumbled. Blakely wasn't so kind to Officer Hannity. Officer Hannity, I understand that you were Officer of the Month last month, she began.
That's right, it's the 5th time I've received the award in 7 years.
He seemed proud of that. Does being Officer of the Month grant you any special powers? She asked.
What do you mean?
He asked suspiciously. Does being Officer of the Month grant you any special abilities, such as X-ray vision, the ability to fly, or anything like that?
Objection.
The prosecutor rose to his feet. Counsel is badgering the witness.
Counselor.
The judge looked down at Blakely. Is there some point to this line of questioning?
There is, Your Honor, Blakely said.
The defense is prepared to offer testimony that Officer Hannity could not possibly have witnessed what he testified to because he was 200 yards away with 2 buildings between himself and the incident. Unless he has the power to see through buildings, he has perjured himself on the stand. Officer Hannity, do you understand the penalty for perjury? The judge asked.
She doesn't have any witnesses.
Hannity protested. We made sure. We checked to see if there were any. I assure you, I have witnesses that will place Officer Hannity where I stated he was, Blakely said. Officer Hannity, do you wish to change your testimony? The judge asked.
No,
he said angrily. I saw the defendant attacking Officer O'Reilly and attempting to wrestle his gun away from him.
Berg saw it too.
We have his statement. When Berg was called to the stand, he was sworn in. He was a young black man wearing a gray hoodie and low-hanging baggy jeans. He gave his testimony, and it corroborated the statements of the 2 officers. Blakely stood up to cross-examine him. Mr. Berg, you stated that you were at the corner of Walnut and Washington at 9:10 p.m. when you witnessed the defendant's attempt to attack and take Officer O'Reilly's firearm. Is that correct?
Yes, I saw it,
he said. Are you certain that you were not 7 miles away from the corner of Walnut and Washington at 9:10 p.m., playing pool in a bar called? She looked at her notes. Brandywine Pub? Berg shot a nervous glance at the 2 police officers.
No, I was at the corner of Walnut and Washington, he said.
Mr. Berg, I have a police report here charging you with common assault. Do you remember that incident?
Blakely asked.
Yes, it was self-defense, he said. They dropped the charges. Where do you reside, Mr. Berg?
Blakely asked. Berg was plainly confused by the question.
What? Where do you reside?
He looked around nervously.
Common assault, he said. Is that here in the city?
She asked. The courtroom exploded with laughter. The prosecutor sprang to his feet.
Your Honor, the witness clearly doesn't understand the question. She's asking you where you live. Counselor,
the judge warned Blakely.
Sorry, Your Honor, I couldn't resist.
She chuckled.
Where do you live, Mr. Berg? 2131 Elm Street,
he said.
Is that an apartment above the Brandywine pub?
She asked.
Yes. And you're certain you weren't playing pool in that pub at 9:10 p.m. of the date in question?
Your Honor, the witness has already answered that question. The prosecutor objected.
You don't have to answer that,
the judge said.
Move on, counselor. Have you ever been charged with any other crimes other than the common assault charges?
She asked. The prosecutor leaped up again.
Your Honor, the witness is not on trial here. The answer has impact on the credibility of the witness,
Blakely said.
I'll allow it. Answer the question, the judge instructed. I've been charged with drug possession and breaking and entering,
Berg said.
How many times?
Blakely asked.
4 times for possession. 1 for breaking and entering, he said. How many times have you been prosecuted?
She asked.
What do you mean?
He asked.
How many times have you been before a judge or brought to trial?
She asked.
Never, he said. Why not?
She asked.
The charges were dropped.
Why were the charges dropped?
She asked. The police told me if I gave them information about the drugs, they would drop the charges,
he said.
Did you receive remuneration in return for your testimony? What?
He was confused again.
Were you paid?
The judge said.
Yes, Berg replied. How much were you paid?
She asked.
$5,000, he said. Your Honor, this witness is a paid police informant. We wish the court to make a note of that. We will recall him later when we offer our own testimony,
Blakely said.
So noted, the judge said. The witness is dismissed. We'll take a recess for lunch.
Blakely gathered her belongings and started to leave. She stopped, and a big smile came over her face when she saw Brand waiting for her. She ran and threw herself on him, giving him a kiss that nearly made him fall.
Wow, he said. I'm glad to see you too. Can we go to lunch?
Absolutely. She grabbed his arm.
Blakely, could I speak with you a moment?
The prosecuting attorney was standing behind them.
Alan, this is my boyfriend, Brand McCalla.
Brand, Alan Holmes.
I'm going to lunch with Brand, Alan. What did you need to talk about? Do you have evidence that the police perjured themselves? Do you have witnesses that placed Berg at that pub?
I do, Alan. I told you that you should drop this case. You insisted that Officer Hannity was a decorated officer and that it was a slam dunk.
I hate police brutality and corruption, Alan. I'm going to burn them.
I hate it too, he said.
Will you let me drop the case and handle it?
No, Alan. I gave you the chance to do that.
I told you they were lying.
I told you they beat that boy and put him in the hospital for no reason.
You wouldn't listen.
Now I'm going to burn them. Maybe you'll listen to me next time.
Maybe I will. He chuckled.
Sorry, Blakely. I should have listened to you this time. Am I going to need to arrest the police today? I believe the judge is going to do that for you, she said. You're a good man, Alan. You're just on the wrong side. Have a nice lunch.
She led Brand out of the courthouse and across the street to a deli. They got sandwiches and sat at a table outside.
I like what you said,
he told her. She tilted her head to one side, making him smile.
What? I like being your boyfriend.
He grinned at her.
Good, I like you being my boyfriend.
They finished their lunch and walked back to the courthouse. She opened a door down the hall from the courtroom and pulled him in. It was a cleaning supply closet, and she slammed the door and pushed him back against it, dropping to her knees and pulling down his zipper. He tangled his fingers in her silky hair, and she devoured his cock, gagging a little as she took it down her throat, her lips pressing against his pubic hair. She deep-throated his cock and he exploded into her throat, feeling her swallow, the flexing of her throat causing him to cry out. When he was done, she zipped him up and pressed herself against him.
You can do me later,
she whispered. She straightened her clothes, combed her fingers through her hair, and opened the door. A man was passing by the door, and she put her fingers to her lips. He burst out laughing and continued down the hall. Brand walked her back to the courtroom, his face flaming, and took his seat. Holmes was done with the case, knowing it was hopeless, and he rested. Blakely began to call her witnesses, and the evidence quickly mounted. 17 people were willing to testify that Bird was in the pub playing pool at the time of the incident. She recalled him to the stand, and he admitted that he had been paid by Officer Hannity to lie. The bailiff led him away in handcuffs. Blakely produced 5 witnesses that placed Hannity 2 blocks away, taking a radio call before hurrying away to join O'Reilly. Hannity was recalled to the stand and recanted his testimony before being arrested. She then called an expert witness to the stand. Randall Peters was a former police chief in Baltimore, and he testified that the police regularly perjured themselves to gain convictions, planted evidence, and provoked violence.
Do you believe that the police routinely lie under oath to obtain convictions?
Blakely asked.
It's an open secret long shared by prosecutors, defense lawyers,
and judges that perjury is widespread among law enforcement officers. Police lie to avoid letting someone they think is guilty, or they know is guilty, go free.
Peters said that he testified that 76% of the police officers on his force, in an anonymous survey, admitted that they frequently bent the facts to establish probable cause, and 48% said that judges were right in tossing police testimony as untrustworthy. She then called 12 witnesses that testified that they saw Officer O'Reilly use his taser on Wayne Hampton before speaking to him, that he had used racial slurs and that he beat Hampton with his nightstick as he lay, incapacitated, on the ground before being joined by Hannity, who also used his nightstick to beat Hampton.
Blakely concluded her case, and the judge ordered O'Reilly's arrest and dismissed all charges against Blakely's client. Brand watched as a tearful mother and grandmother hugged Blakely and celebrated with Hampton. She saw Brand waiting for her and ran down the aisle to him, throwing herself on him again, and she saw her eyes were moist.
"Little lost girl or courtesan?" he asked.
She laughed up at him.
"Definitely courtesan," she said. "Take me home with you, Brand. I want to sleep in your bed tonight. What about your car?"
he asked.
"We'll pick it up tomorrow," she said. "No, let's leave yours here. I want to be mauled on the way home. No dancing?"
he smiled.
"No, this is the thrill of victory, not the agony of defeat,"
she giggled.
"A pun," he laughed. "You continue to surprise me, Blakely. Take me home," she said. "I'm going to make you have a heart attack and then revive you and cook you dinner. You do know the way to a man's heart," he laughed. "You're driving and I'm going to give you a first-class mauling. Don't wreck and kill me. I won't be wearing a seatbelt."
She didn't, but it was a close thing. Her skirt was up around her waist before they got out of the parking garage, and by the time they got to the highway it, and her shoes were all she had on. Brand had two fingers inside her dripping pussy and one delicious fat nipple between his teeth. He was pulling on the other, and Blakely was moaning.
"Bite it harder," she begged. "Oh God, Brand, I need it. Fuck me with those big, fat fingers. Wait. Don't make me come. We'll die if you do, because it's going to be a big one."
She pulled onto the shoulder, and he tipped her over the edge, using three fingers now and his thumb on her clit as he twisted her nipple between his thumb and forefinger. She slumped for a moment and then moved back onto the highway as he kissed his way all over her gorgeous body, squeezing her breasts and stroking her thighs. Her legs amazed him. Each muscle group was so clearly defined, but she was so soft and silky.
"You have the most beautiful legs," he told her. "I think you work out."
"I do,"
she told him.
"You better not get fat and flabby on me either. I wanted to be a dancer when I was in school, and I was very good at it. I danced for a year in New York City before I finished my law degree. My boobs got too big and I retired. I can tell by looking at them and watching you dance," he said. "Now I'm going to make you come again."
She squealed as he nipped at her inner thigh and manipulated her clit with the tips of his fingers. Blakely was flying. She felt so warm and so alive, her performance in court fueling her excitement and the man she realized she loved driving her wild. Thankfully, she pulled into his driveway before he drove her insane, and he got out and carried her inside. He took her to his bed and she proceeded to fuck him into total exhaustion. When 10 minutes of her oral ministrations failed to make him more than half erect, she gave up and they napped, naked in each other's arms. When he awakened, he smelled something delicious. She was in the kitchen, as naked as the day she was born, cooking something that involved a lot of garlic. She made him clean garlic cloves, red leaf lettuce and romaine hearts while she finished her cooking. She put the meat she had been cooking on a plate, and they rolled it up in the leaves with a plum sauce she had made and ate it rolled up. The timer went off and she jumped up and took bread out of one of his ovens. They bit garlic cloves in half and rubbed them on the buttery bread. By the time she ate 2 pieces and he ate 4, the timer on the other oven went off and she got out a dish of chicken breasts, pan-fried and cooked in a creamy sauce. They drank wine and ate chicken until they were stuffed.
"You're a very good cook," he told her. "How did you learn so many things? How old are you, Blakely?"
"I'm 32, she said. "I know you're a year older than me. Brand, I need to go home and get my stuff to stay with you, and I need to check my computers. You can go with me, but you can't come in my office, okay?"
"Absolutely," he said. "Do you have any ice cream?"
"I have lime sherbet," she said.
"Perfect, we'll have dessert," he told her.
He got a bag of Milano cookies, put on boxers, and she drove naked to her house. She quickly finished her business, and they sat on her sofa and ate sherbet and cookies before she pulled on a t-shirt and shorts, and they drove back to his house. Brand had a hot tub and she stripped so they could get in. He couldn't keep his hands or his mouth off her, and he soon had her squirming and panting. He sat her on the edge of the tub and tongued her little pussy until it became so sensitive she begged him to fuck her. He was happy to carry her back inside and take care of that itch. They fell asleep, and in the morning she was gone when he got up. She texted him at work, asked him to dinner, and they set a time to get together. He saw her pull up in a yellow and black Dodge Charger. It was one of the Super Bees, and he fell in love with her all over again. She came in, causing a stir in the restaurant as every head turned to watch her walk to him. He stood and she kissed him. They ordered and she was quiet.
"Is something wrong?" he asked.
"Well, sort of," she said hesitantly. "I have to go out of town tomorrow, Brand. I'll probably be gone a week."
"Okay, I'll see you when you get back then," he said.
She looked up at him hopefully.
"You mean you don't mind?"
"Of course I mind," he said.
"I'll miss you like hell. It's going to be like I'm missing a limb,
but you have something you need to do. I know you aren't leaving because you don't want to be with me. How could I doubt that after the last week? You'll be back when you're done, right?
Oh, yes, I will. Thank you for being understanding, Brand. I just didn't want to disappoint you by leaving so soon. It's work, and I have to do it. I promise I'll spend every possible minute with you when I get back.
They spent the night at her house, and she was such a bundle of sexual energy he wondered if he'd ever recover. He got up to see her off the next morning, and when she kissed him goodbye she whispered in his ear. I love you, Brand.
All the way. I can't wait to get back.
He could hardly speak. This little angel, little devil, loved him.
I love you too.
He managed to croak from his suddenly constricted throat.
I love you more than I ever dreamed I could.
She was gone, and he felt miserable. He moped around the rest of the day until his secretary asked him what was wrong.
I'm in love.
He smiled at her.
Well, if this is love, I'd have to see you get dumped.
She laughed.
You're supposed to be happy when you're in love.
She's out of town. He explained.
And she just told me she loved this morning as she was leaving.
She texted him every day and called him twice while she was gone. They talked for over an hour each time, and she called him from the airport when she arrived. He told her to come over when she got settled in, and when she got there he was waiting, sitting in a rocking chair on the porch. She jumped out, and the sight of her in a little red-flowered sundress nearly made him cry. She danced up the steps and he met her at the top, swinging her around and squeezing her until she couldn't breathe. She kissed him over and over.
Do you still love me, Brand?
She looked up into his face, molded against him.
More than ever.
He said.
God, I miss you, Blakely.
Me too.
She said.
Did you have a good trip?
He asked out. A shadow passed over her face, and then she smiled up at him.
It was okay.
She said.
I miss you though.
2 weeks later, they were sitting on her sofa and she had been pensive. She looked up at him.
Have you ever been married, Brand?
No, I was engaged once.
He said.
What happened? Why didn't you marry her?
She asked.
We were in college.
He explained.
We were still kind of young and wild. We partied a lot. I had a final I needed to study for, and she went to a party with a girlfriend. They drank a lot and smoked some weed. A group of them went over to this guy's house. He was some kind of a big shot drug lord. He let the drugs flow for free to his party guests, and Lily, that was her name, tried some meth. That really got her going, and they had quite a party with her and some of the other girls. She tried some more and her heart just stopped. They dumped her body in an alley downtown and that was it.
The police investigated, but the guy went back to Mexico and they never caught him.
Oh my God.
Blakely burst into tears. I'm so sorry, Brand. I had no idea.
I didn't mean.
It's okay. Brand hugged her tightly. There's no way you could have known. I just hope someday that bastard gets caught. I'd love to be your girlfriend, Brand.
She pushed him over and kissed him.
Let me show you how much.
6 months later he moved in with her, and they were married just 2 months past a year later. He met her aunt and uncle who had raised her for the first time the day before the wedding. Her aunt Marie was a tall, statuesque woman with raven black hair, and her husband, John, was a small, quiet man with bushy blonde hair. He fell in love with them both instantly, and they returned his obvious affection. They told him Blakely's parents had been killed in an automobile accident, and that they loved her like the child they were unable to have. Blakely was obviously very devoted to them, and after the first day they all seemed like one big happy family. Brand's parents flew in the afternoon and joined the party for dinner. Brand had it catered at their home, and they ate it outside on the deck. He still had his house and both sets of parents stayed there. They seemed to hit it off instantly, and the only awkward moments were when Uncle John pulled Brand aside for a talk. And Brand's mother did the same with Blakely. Love, fidelity, and trust were the subjects, and the awkwardness was palpable. They were both able to escape without damage, and they shared a smile after they got back. The wedding went off without a hitch, and they fell into their married life without any serious problems at all. After 10 years they were more in love than they had been when they first married. They still fucked like bunnies and they went dancing every weekend. Blakely hadn't changed a bit, and she was still a magnet for men. Brand's hair was a little lighter shade of red, but that was the only change in him other than a few lines around his eyes that Blakely said gave him character. He had become head of the software engineering department, and Blakely was now a senior partner in her law firm. 2 or 3 times a year she went away on business, and several times she had meetings locally that she told him about but wouldn't discuss. Brand knew he shouldn't let it bother him. He had known all along that she wouldn't talk about it, but it did. She had never given him any idea at all that she was interested in other men in any way, and she was the most loving, considerate wife that he could imagine. Their sexual life was, if anything, more frequent and exciting than it had ever been. The idea that there was a part of her life that wasn't shared with him grew larger and larger in his mind. He knew he was making something big out of something that shouldn't matter. It had never mattered before, but for some reason he couldn't get it out of his head. He decided he needed to talk to Blakely about it. He made dinner that night, and over a glass of wine afterward he broached the subject to her.
Blakely, something is bothering me. He told her. I know I agreed that I wouldn't ask you any questions about your trips and your business. I agreed to that, but I'm worried. It just keeps running around in my mind and I can't get it out. I'm very sorry. I don't know what to do. Why do we have satellite uplinks in our house? Why do we have computer equipment that puts my office to shame? Why do we have radio broadcast transmitters? Why do you go away? That stuff freaks me out.
It's like there's part of you I don't even know. We've been talking about children. That scares the shit out of me. I think you do dangerous things, things you don't want me involved in, and I'm afraid I'm going to lose you. What if we have a beautiful little girl that looks just like her mother, and someday you just don't come home? I'm terrified, Blakely. Terrified that you're doing something that will either kill you or hurt me so badly that I can't get over it. Bran found himself sobbing, his face buried in his hands. I don't think I would want to live without you. He looked up at her and saw the horrified expression on her face. She burst into tears and ran across the distance separating them. She threw herself on him, and he cradled her in his arms while she wept against his chest. I had no idea you were feeling this way, Bran. Why didn't you talk to me sooner? She asked. We've always talked when we had a problem. You know you can talk to me, baby. Yes, I do know that about everything but this. We can't talk about this, Blakely. You won't talk about it. I won't talk about where I go or what I do. You did agree to that, Bran. You don't get to go back on your word. I was totally honest with you. I told you about this and you promised you were okay with it. If you weren't, you had the chance to walk away. You said you would be okay, and you made me fall in love with you. You don't get to change your mind now. That wasn't the deal. I will talk about how it's affecting us and our relationship. I'll talk about anything. You can't bottle things up like this. I love you, baby, and I can't stand to see you this way. I don't want you to be insecure. What would you do if I tried to find out about you? He asked. Nothing. She said. You have zero chance to succeed. Do you want to do that? I might. He said. I might surprise you. She laughed. You surprise me every day, Brand. Knock yourself out. I want you to know, though, nothing about anything I do impacts my relationship with you in any way. I married you, Brand. I married you for life. I told you I would never cheat on you, never betray you, and I never have. You know that. Has our marriage suffered one day, one minute, because of me? No, I believe every word you say. He told her. That doesn't stop me from worrying. How can I reassure you? She asked. You can't. I know it isn't you, Blakely. It's me. You've always been totally honest and open with me. You did whatever you do before I met you. It's kind of exciting in a way, but it's terrifying as hell in another way. I wonder what you're doing and I wonder why you can't tell me. Telling you why would be the same as telling you everything. She explained. By not telling you anything, I keep you safe, Brand. I keep the ugliness away from you. Would you like for me to tell you how I get drug dealers and pimps and mob bosses to testify in court? It's an ugly, dangerous business. Do you want me to quit? No, I think you matter. He said. I think you help people and it's part of you. What are you going to do if we have a baby? Do you want to have a baby? She asked. More than anything except for you to love me. He answered. I wouldn't risk that for anything, but yes, I want to have three. We agreed to do that. She said. Do you want to practice? I'll stop taking pills tomorrow. I love you, Brand, and I'll do anything to keep you happy. Well, I do want to practice. He said. I want you pregnant, Blakely, but only when you're ready. I'm already deliriously happy, by the way. They practiced three times that night, and when he came home the next day, she told him she had a new out-of-town job. She was packing and she told him she would be gone one day and then she would be having meetings locally until she would have to be gone for a week. Bran decided that night he was going to take her up on her challenge and try to find out what was going on. Blakely got off the plane at Dulles and a car was waiting for her. They drove through the city and out into Virginia, finally pulling up in front of a huge white plantation house. The driver opened the door for her and carried her bag into the house. A domestic took her bag, led her to her room and allowed her to freshen up. When she emerged, there was a mimosa waiting for her, and she was taken through a set of double doors and out onto a patio. The garden stretched out before her, and she saw her uncle and a huge black gentleman sitting at a table. They rose at her approach, and she kissed them both on the cheek. Hello, Uncle John, Benjamin. She greeted them. Before we get started, I need to tell you that you are becoming a threat to my marriage. She told them. Brand is asking questions and I think it's time to bring him in. What if we disagree? Benjamin asked. She gave him a look. Don't disagree. She said. I'll do anything it takes to keep my marriage. He laughed a huge laugh. I do believe she's threatening us, John. She smiled and her uncle shuddered. I don't think it's a threat, Ben. I think if we become a threat to her, she'll just kill us. Benjamin became serious. Has it come to that, Blakely? No, not yet. She said. He is very smart and very resourceful, Ben. If he finds out before I have a chance to tell him, he might leave me. If he does, you won't survive. He wants to have children and so do I. I'll keep working, but he's going to be a part of it. Have I made myself clear? Crystal. John said. I'm sorry, baby. We knew this was coming. We just didn't know how soon. Mount the operation. Leave him enough clues to find you and bring him in. If you let him take you out of a rough situation, that should do the trick. He won't want you to do things alone after that. He will never have any idea that he's married to a woman that could rescue herself and him. You're selling him short. She said. I know what I can do. He doesn't. I'll play this my way. When Blakely got home, Brand was ready. He was really very good at electronic gadgetry. He picked Blakely up at the airport in her car and he had fitted it with GPS tracking so he could follow her on his laptop wherever either of them were. As soon as she got in the shower, he put a bug in her purse and in her phone. While she was gone, he had accessed her computers through their home network and installed a keystroke tracker. Blakely routinely swept any area she was in for bugs, and she quickly found his monitoring devices. She smiled and left them in place. Everything was going according to plan. She went to work and spent the day in the office catching up on her legal work. It wasn't that long before she finished and began to think about her plan. She called her contact and arranged an afternoon meeting. At loose ends, she went and picked up sandwiches. Brand pretended to be very surprised when she showed up at his office just before lunch. He jumped up and kissed her when his secretary opened the door.
"Hey, baby, what are you doing here?"
he asked.
"I came to take my lover to lunch,"
she told him.
"He works here."
"Oh, anyone I know?" he asked.
"No, sometimes I think I don't even know him,"
she said.
"He's adorable, though. Got any plans tonight?"
he asked.
"Yes, I have some practicing to do,"
she said.
"I have a big event coming up and I don't want to be bad at it. In fact,"
she locked his office door and dropped to her knees in front of him. Before he knew what was happening, his pants were around his knees and she had engulfed him in tremendous heat and suction. She looked up at him with those blazing eyes and he leaned against the wall and groaned.
"God, Blakely, what if my boss comes in? He'll have to wait his turn."
She grinned up at him and went back down. Blakely never wanted to stop. After 10 years, she loved this cock more than the first time she tasted it. She desperately wanted his cum in her mouth. Brand desperately wanted to give it to her. He pulled her head into him until he felt her gag. She swallowed and he slipped into her throat, feeling the incredible heat as her lips surrounded the base of his cock and he exploded with a groan of ecstasy. His knees were weak for a moment and then he pulled her up, picking her up and sweeping his desk clear before sitting her on the edge and pulling her dress up around her waist. He pulled her panties down roughly and knelt between her thighs, diving ruthlessly into her dripping little pussy. He thrust his tongue as deeply as he could get in her cleft and sucked up her juices like nectar. Replacing his tongue with a finger and then two, he used his tongue on her little clit, teasing it out of hiding until it was erect under his ministrations as she writhed and bucked her hips toward him. He fucked her pussy relentlessly with his fingers and flipped her clit up and down and from side to side until she exploded, biting her fist to keep the scream welling up inside her from escaping. When she began to calm down, he stood and plunged his renewed erection deep inside her welcoming heat. She groaned as he sank fully inside her, the size and thickness of his cock always surprising her as she felt it briefly kiss her cervix. As long as it was brief, that always excited Blakely beyond belief as she thought about him coming so close to her womb. She knew there was little likelihood that she would become pregnant 3 days after stopping her birth control. It was still very erotic, and she came quickly as the desk rocked with the passion of their coupling. Having already come once, Brand would ordinarily have lasted a long time, even in Blakely's snug little pussy, but the situation was so exciting that he exploded almost immediately, sparking her to clutch his arms and stiffen in a huge contraction of her own. They spent some time catching their breath and straightening their clothes. When they were composed, they went outside and ate on campus at a picnic table under a tree. They sat close together and Blakely leaned against his strong body, reveling in his touch and closeness. She walked him back to his building and left for her meeting. Brand followed her on his laptop and noticed that she went down into the commercial district and stopped at the docks. He logged onto the bug in her purse and heard her arranging a meeting with someone named Johnson. He had no idea who Johnson was, but he was going to be close to that meeting. He took off work, drove to a warehouse and watched as Blakely went in. Inside, Blakely was making her deal. Alvis Pharmaceuticals was a major player in the production of drugs used to treat heart disease. It was a South American company with FDA clearance to sell and manufacture alpha blockers and beta blockers in the US. What was not known to the general public was that Alvis was also heavily involved in smuggling. Drugs, people and weapons were their major source of profit. They were considered untouchable by law enforcement, and the CEO was heavily tied in with members of Congress and the military. He had made some mistakes recently. Tomas Gomez was a player. He liked them young, famous and reluctant. Drugs made the reluctant cooperative enough, and the daughter of a major Hollywood star had made some noise about a year ago about being abducted and raped on a private island in the Caribbean. It had been a gangbang session and a best-selling Harvard professor, a member of the British royal family, the son of a US senator, and two high-ranking military officers had been involved. The young woman had told quite a harrowing tale of sexual slavery, forced sex with drugged women and huge cash payouts to hush up the situation. Unfortunately for the people involved, the Hollywood father kept stirring the pot until the stench needed to be cleaned up. The involvement of high government officials was an embarrassment to a lot of powerful people, and this was the type of job Blakely would take. Gomez was going to be visiting a distribution center in San Diego, and she was planning to take him. Her contact had information about his itinerary that she needed. It was a setup. When she stepped into the warehouse, there were 6 armed men inside and Johnson was dead on the floor. Blakely whirled to her left and made a draw on her 9mm from her thigh holster, putting a metal stairway and a stack of wooden crates between her and the armed men. She got off 2 shots while going for cover, dropping 2 men. One was a center mass shot and the other took the thug high in the right shoulder. The rest scrambled for cover. She heard someone call out.
"Bitch! You should take a look at this before you do anything else stupid."
Blakely peeked out and her heart sank. It was Gomez, and he was holding his gun to the side of the head of a small child. It was a young girl, about 8, with long blonde hair. It was her cousin David's little girl, Amanda. She was crying and there was duct tape over her mouth. Her hands were bound behind her.
"Throw out the gun, bitch, or I'll splatter her brains,"
Gomez shouted. Brand was frantic. He could hear what was going on in there, and it was horrifying to him. He thought about calling the police, but he didn't trust the promptness of their response, and he was sure Blakely wouldn't like it. He didn't know what to do. He was unarmed and not a fighter anyway. He knew he had to do something. He got out and ran to Blakely's Suburban. He noticed the compartment in the back and hoped to find a jack handle or something he could use as a weapon. He felt the futility of attacking armed men with a jack handle, but he was sure he needed to do something. He had a key to her vehicle and he used it to unlock the tailgate. When he opened the compartment, he was shocked to discover 3 pistols, a shotgun, and 3 assault rifles. He grabbed 2 of the pistols and stuck them in his belt. He had no idea how to use the assault rifles, but he did know how to shoot a shotgun. He checked to see that it was loaded and grabbed a handful of shells, stuffing them in his pocket. Satisfied he was as dangerous as he could get, he cautiously approached the warehouse door, gently easing it open. What he saw inside made him throw caution to the wind. Blakely was caught in an agony of indecision. She couldn't let anything happen to Amanda. That much she knew for sure. She had a knife on a string down the back of her neck and she hoped she'd get a chance to use it. She threw out the gun and stood up. Her arms were seized by the thugs that were still walking and she was thrust roughly forward and forced to her knees in front of Gomez. He pushed Amanda away and she fell against a pile of crates, crying out in pain as her head struck the wood, and collapsing dazed to the floor.
"Well, well," Gomez leered at Blakely. "We heard rumors about the badass bitch working for Ben Abrams. You lived up to the billing. You got 2 of my guys. You're going to pay for that."
He looked her up and down, stripping her with his eyes.
"Damn, I had no idea the package would be so attractive. What do you think, Samson?"
he asked the large, black thug holding her right arm.
"She won hot mama," he replied. "You finna give her a test drive, boss? She's way more than hot."
Gomez walked around them.
"Open up that blouse,
Melendez."
Melendez pulled his knife, using it to flick the buttons off of Blakely's shirt. Her lacy bra came into view and he cut the front, scratching her with the point of his knife and leaving a thin trickle of blood between her exposed breasts. All 3 of the men looked at her gorgeous mounds and their mouths went dry. None of them had ever seen a woman this sexually attractive before.
"Damn, this bitch ought to be doing porn,"
Samson said.
"You got to give me a crack at this one, boss. We'll let her do a little porn," Gomez said.
"You can have her after I get done, Samson. That cock of yours will have her loose as an old sock. I want her while she's still tight. Get that skirt off." The 2 men pushed Blakely down on her back and held her pinned as Gomez pulled her skirt off. The thigh holster came into view and Gomez laughed.
"Sexy panties and leather. That's quite a look you've got going on there, bitch." He tore her panties off, and his dick was rock hard looking at this incredible woman. He pulled down his pants and tried to shove his cock inside her. It was incredibly painful to Blakely. She was bone dry and she whimpered a little. It was uncomfortable to Gomez, too, and he spit on his hand several times, coating his dick with saliva and leaning over to spit on her pussy. Blakely felt disgusted and watched for her chance. With the 2 men holding her arms, there was little she could do. The man by the door, not participating, watched intently, stroking his cock he had taken out of his pants. Gomez thrust roughly into Blakely, slapping her twice and mauling her breasts as he raked her savagely. He lasted only a couple of dozen thrusts, coming inside her tightness and moving to her arm, allowing Samson to move between her thighs.
"You're going to like this, bitch," he hissed in her ear. "Samson's got the big package."
Blakely was horrified. Samson had a cock that would have given horses penis envy. This was going to hurt a lot. Thankful for the small pleasure of having at least Gomez's cum in her for lubrication, she braced herself, still waiting for her opportunity. The huge purple head of that monster cock split her little pussy, and she nearly screamed in pain, the tendons of her neck tight with the agony. There was the roar of a shotgun blast from the doorway and the man masturbating was nearly torn in half. Gomez, startled and shocked, momentarily lost his presence of mind and Blakely moved quickly and decisively, freeing her right arm momentarily. Her hand shot to the leather string behind her neck, and she had her knife. She swiped at Samson's cock, nearly severing it, and buried the blade in Melendez's neck before making a swipe at Gomez's arm. Blood spurted, covering her, and she shielded her eyes. She rolled, burying her knife 3 times in Gomez's belly, and she was standing, looking down at 3 dying men as Brand was running across the room toward her. He caught her up in his arms, squeezing her fiercely and crying.
"I came as quick as I could, baby,"
he wept.
"I'm so sorry I didn't move quicker. I wasn't ready. Are you hurt?"
"Only my pride," she kissed him.
"The blood isn't mine. You did good, lover. I was kind of counting on you. You were a little late, but you did good. You knew I was here?"
Brand was nearly speechless.
"I keep track of the man I love," she told him. "I knew you were following me and I kept my purse so you could hear what was going on. They had Amanda, Brand. I don't know how that happened, but heads are going to roll. I think she's passed out. We've got to get her out of here."
Brand walked over and looked down at Gomez.
"Oh my God, Blakely, that's him."
"Who, Brand?" she asked.
"It's the guy. That's the drug lord that gave Lily the overdose. It's him, Blakely. You got him."
"I'm glad, Brand, but that's not why I was after him. We've got to get Amanda out of here.
We'll talk about this later."
Brand hurried to the small form, tore the tape off her, and carried her out to Blakely's vehicle. They put her in the back seat and Blakely drove home, Brand following closely. They cleaned her up and put her in bed. Blakely stripped off her ruined clothes and stood in the shower.
She scrubbed herself, washing away the filth, douching several times, and then it hit her. She sat naked on the floor of the shower, holding her knees to her chest, and wept. That's where Brand found her 15 minutes later. He picked her wet body up, cradling her in his arms, and sat her in a chair. He dried her off and combed out her long, beautiful hair, murmuring soft words of endearment and love in her ear. He carried her to bed and tucked her in, promising to be right back before he quickly showered himself and crawled in bed with her. He held her tightly, and she was shivering. He stroked her and told her how much he loved her 100 times. She gradually began to relax, and finally she slept, warm and safe in his arms. She was up in the morning when he woke up, and she had Amanda sitting at the bar, eating pancakes when he came downstairs. She moved quickly to embrace him, kissing him fiercely before returning to the cooktop. She made him pancakes, and he marveled at her resilience. Blakely didn't feel at all resilient, but she felt better, and she knew she was going to be okay. Brand didn't seem terribly shaken by the events of the previous day, and she knew they were going to have a long talk. Everything was different now, and they would have to adjust. Her cousin David came and picked Amanda up, promising he would call his father for an explanation. When he was gone, Blakely poured 2 big mugs of coffee and pulled Brand to the sofa. She snuggled up into his side, and he wrapped his arm around her.
"Blakely, what are you?"
he asked.
"Are you some kind of spy or government agent?"
She laughed.
"I don't know exactly what I am. I'll tell you everything, Brand."
She took a sip of her coffee, drew in a long breath, and began ... "Time isn't really anyone's friend. Sometimes you do have to be patient. I'm not a very patient person. When I was 15, I was skinny, hardly had any boobs, wore glasses, braces, and my ass was as flat as a pancake. That seemed odd to me, because mom was hot. She was all curvy and sexy, and men constantly hit on her. She told me I was likely just a late bloomer, and if I was patient, I'd be stunning someday. It wasn't any fun waiting. I was smart, 3rd in my class, and popular enough because dad was the football coach, but I wanted to be hot, too. I had very long blonde hair and my face was like mom's, but the body didn't match. I talked to dad about it, and he designed a workout plan for me that focused on my legs and butt. It took me 4 years, but by the time I got out of high school, I was a hard body with a butt had people drooling. My boobs grew, too. I wasn't ever going to be porn star big, but I had a healthy, small C cup going on. I was interested in a relationship, but not sport fucking. Just watching the sluts in high school gave me the impression that the kind of guy I wanted might fuck one of them if the circumstances were right, but they weren't going home to meet mama. When I started college, I quickly learned that there were situations I didn't want to be in. Several of the girls in my dorm were sleeping with every guy that asked, and several were gang raped because they passed out from drugs or booze at parties. I'd been drunk twice in my life. Both times were at home in my parents' house, and although it started off feeling pretty nice, it quickly went downhill, ending up with me embracing my porcelain lover and feeling awful the next day. That cured me. I drank wine with meals or to relax a little, beer after being really hot or at picnics, and occasionally something good like sipping whiskey, brandy or cognac, but I didn't get drunk. I smoked a little weed and I liked it better than the alcohol, but it was illegal in my state and I didn't want a record. To stay away from the gang rape stuff, I avoided the Greeks and the jocks and started taking judo lessons. That graduated into jiu-jitsu and Muay Thai. I was kind of a badass by my 2nd year, and I changed my major to criminal justice. I had absolutely no interest in law enforcement. The idea of arresting people is repulsive to me, and using violence against someone that wasn't violent toward me just outraged my sense of morals. I was interested in private security or investigation. My father and brother were hunters, and dad was an ex-military guy before he retired early and started coaching football. They taught me how to shoot a gun and a bow. I wasn't interested in hunting, but I went to the gun range with them every time they went. I had a little. 380 for my purse or a thigh holster if I was wearing a dress, and a .45 ACP if I wanted a bigger pop. When I graduated from college, I entered a strategic security school, and in 18 months I got a job working security for a major corporation. After 3 years, I got a call from my Uncle John. He was a major player in DC and he was an attorney. He wanted me to meet with a guy to talk about a job. When I got there, I met Benjamin Abrams for the first time. He was a huge black man, about 6'6", and he must have weighed over 300 pounds. He said he worked for the government, and he was looking for a female operative. I told him I wasn't interested in working for the government.
"Why not?"
he asked.
"I think it's immoral,"
I told him.
"I don't work for protection rackets or organized crime."
He laughed, and his whole frame shook.
"Okay, I don't work for the government. I'm working for a group of very powerful men. Some of them are in government, some in finance, and some in business. We have jobs that need to get done that we can't give to intelligence. Some of them are messy. We'll allow you to pick your teams, pick your jobs, and you'll be well compensated. We'll get you a law degree. You only have to do 3 jobs a year. Do you think you'd be interested?"
"Will I be asked to kill people?"
I asked.
"Yes, but they deserve to die,"
he said.
"I'll be the judge of that," I said. "I get to turn the jobs down if I don't agree that they need to be done."
"Absolutely,"
he said. I could tell he was lying.
"No thanks,"
I said.
"Why not?"
he asked.
"You're lying,"
I told him.
"I won't get to turn them down or you'll mislead me."
"I told you she was good,"
Uncle John said.
"You can turn the jobs down, baby, if that's what it takes to get you. If you don't want them, we'll give them to another team. You really think I'm good and you want me that bad?"
I commented.
Yes and yes, Benjamin said. We don't want you until you get your law degree. You start at Dartmouth next week.
That was it. I went to work on that degree and they pushed me hard. They also greased the rails and I was on a fast track to what looked like everything I had ever wanted. I had nearly zero social life, but I had something else. I had powerful connections and something even more interesting. I had the chance to make a difference. They put me through schools that were intense physical experiences, too. By the time I passed the bar, I was a lean, mean machine. 6 months after I passed the bar, Uncle John had me positioned in a small but prestigious law firm that specialized in criminal defense. Somehow, I was never quite sure how it happened, I started as a junior partner. I worked my ass off, and gradually overcame the resentment that some of the attorneys felt about me. I was good at my job and with the resources I had available in investigation, I got a lot of cases with favorable outcomes. I seldom heard from Uncle John or Benjamin for a year. I was getting settled in with the firm, and one day I was called into the office of one of the senior partners. He told me I was on leave for 3 weeks, he gave me a package and sent me home. There was a file, several reports, a threat assessment and a mission in that package. There was an army officer that someone wanted retired. He had enough connections and enough of a reputation that he couldn't be forced out. His staff was fanatically loyal. The problem was that he was causing trouble for his superiors. He had a habit of getting people killed. The people that were dying were young, married white men. General Brooks had some kind of deal worked out with some African businessmen that was one of the most horrible things I ever heard about. The widows of those young white soldiers were disappearing and turning up drug addicted and on the arm of those African businessmen. The intel said he was running a white slaver ring. He would drug his victims, get them educated in rape sessions, addict them to drugs and sell them all over the continent. It was quite the lucrative business. He needed to go away without a scandal. I didn't give a damn about the scandal. If the army got a black eye, that was no skin off my nose. I viewed them as the enforcement arm of a corrupt government, anyway. I did hate the bastard and I was happy to take him down. I got to pick my team, just as I had been promised, and we arranged a very nasty end for General Brooks. He wound up as a pony boy in a South American S&M club with no tongue and no way out. I was rewarded handsomely and went home. I did 14 jobs and killed at least 9 people until I met you, Brand. I say at least because I shot at a lot more people than that. I didn't have time to find out whether or not I hit them or if they were dead. Since I met you, I've done 3 jobs and one of them was fatal. Now you know. I'm a mercenary problem solver. I'm ready to put that behind me or have you join me. Either way, I want us to be together. We can have those babies now. The question is, do you still want me to be your wife? Do you still love me and can you still live with me? I love you and I'll do whatever you want me to. I'll become a full-time attorney, we can work together doing a few of these jobs a year, I'll quit both and become a full-time wife and mother, or you can leave me. I'll never leave you. I just need some kind of commitment here. What's it going to be, Brand? Brand shook his head. It was like waking up from a trance. I guess that's the short version, huh, baby? She laughed. Yeah, I guess it is. It's hard to distill a lifetime down into just the bare bones. I'll tell you any details you want to know, Brand. I just wanted you to know. This is what I could never tell you. I wanted to, but it wasn't safe. I would never have told you, but it was beginning to affect us. I can never allow that to happen. I decided to let you find out. That's why I let you track me. I was afraid you thought I was having affairs or that I belonged to a secret cult or something. It was scaring the hell out of me. I don't want to lose you. I knew I had to do something. It was making you unhappy with me and I couldn't allow that to happen. You didn't really need me to rescue you, did you? He asked. I think I could have got out. She said. It was going to be dicey. I'd have been messed up a lot worse. You kept me from being raped any more than I already was, Brand.
Thank you.
It was bad enough. She cried a little and he pulled her onto his lap and held her tightly. She raised her face to him and he kissed her gently. I think you're the bravest, scariest, sexiest woman on the planet. He told her. You're mine, Blakely. I don't like you being in dangerous situations. God, baby, you killed 5 men in there. I don't know how I feel about that. I understand how you've been in these kill or be killed situations. Some of them just seem like you're a stone-cold killer. How can you do that?
Yes, and you helped me.
She said. You killed a man in there on your own. I didn't know if you could do that. They were hurting you. His eyes were moist. I couldn't let that happen. What about Gomez? If you could have gotten a shot at him, would you have taken it? If you had him in a scope, would you have pulled the trigger? In a heartbeat. Some people just need to die. He said. That's the only kind of people I ever take a job on. She said. I hunt the Gomezes of the world. What would you do to protect me? I would blow up the world to keep you safe, Blakely. What do you want to do? First, I want you to take me to bed and make love to me. She said. I'm yours, Brand. That's what you said, and those bastards tried to take me away from you. I want you to take me back. Will you do that? There's going to be no doubt. He promised. That's my pussy and you're my woman. He stood up and carried her to their bed. She had on just a baggy sweatshirt, and he had it off her in a matter of seconds. He was all over her, and she responded the way she always had. There was something about this man that made her insatiable. She felt heat all over her body, radiating into him, and he claimed her, his cock sinking into her, thrilling every fiber of her being as the familiar feelings swept over her.
He was her man, and there was no feeling in the universe like his big, firm cock sinking into her little pussy. It was driving her wild, and she felt the contractions pulse through her body, the pleasure almost painful in its intensity, as she convulsed beneath him. She felt him pulse inside her, and she was filled with liquid warmth as she continued to spasm. She heard screaming and realized distantly that it was her voice. As she came back to Earth, she realized her throat was raw and that she must have been screaming for some time. She also remembered a small gush of fluid as she came, her skin's glands emptying in a rush. The sheets and her thighs were soaked, and she couldn't ever remember doing that before. She finally caught her breath enough to speak.
"Jesus, Brand, that was intense. What did you do to me?"
"I made love to my wife," he said.
"God, Blakely, I've never seen you come like that before. I'm going to have to rescue you more often. Have I told you how much I love you today?"
She pulled him down, rolling them over so that she was on top.
"No,"
she said. "But I want to hear it. Then I want you to tell me what we're going to do for the rest of our lives.
I love you so much I'd die for you," he said.
"First, we're going to make babies. Then, between making babies, we're going to carefully go over the list of people that are connected with this job you just did. We're going to punish everyone involved. Then we'll take one job per year if we can find one we think needs doing. The rest of the time, we're going to be ordinary people. Well, you were never ordinary, but as ordinary as we can be when one of us burns as hot as you do. You'll practice law, I'll program computers, we'll go out dancing and come home and spoil our kids rotten. How does that sound? I don't know how I got so lucky."
She kissed him.
"Love me now, Brand." As she slid down to take him in her mouth, he smiled. She really had no idea what she was. That was the thing about her he loved the most. It was going to be a hell of a ride. All he could do was hang on for dear life. The end. You have been listening to this podcast on the Erotica Podcast Network. Please visit our other podcasts. Their links are in the description of this episode. The Erotica Podcast and the Erotica Taboo Podcast offer $2 subscriptions, which opens up bonus content.